Black or White by Michael Jackson. And what a better way to start off today's program on KPPPLP-FM. This is Cindy Gomez-Shemp.
And this is Duke Gomez-Shemp.
And Nemo Cicados.
And we are broadcasting live right now on the air through 365 Live. Soon you'll be able to find our programming on 88.1 FM on your airwaves, adding local color to your airwaves.
If you want to get a hold of us and leave us a message or give us your comments, you can call 701-566-0917 or tweet us at @media_PPP or email Cindy at kpppfm.com or Duke at kpppfm.com.
And I really do appreciate all the comments, the topic ideas that people have sent in, ideas of programming that people want to hear on the station. So we want to hear from you. Keep it coming. Today's show is Black and White Comparisons. And there's been a lot of talk about racial inequality in this country, especially with all of the riots, with all of the protesting that have been unleashed pretty much for a year steadily now since the death of Michael Black, whose anniversary just happened.
Michael Brown.
Sorry.
Michael Brown, who was Black.
Who was Black, yes. But I always say Michael Black.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. And we've seen protests in Denver. We've seen protests in New York.
St. Louis.
In Baltimore. Cincinnati, Oakland,
Minneapolis,
San Francisco. It's been ongoing, like nonstop. And so have the deaths, the ongoing deaths, the constant terrorizing of Black and Brown communities by police forces.
It's definitely been at the forefront of what's going on in this country with people's movements, too, because there's been so many people forming coalitions and a lot of African-American groups getting together and really coming up with strategies to deal with this and create change in this community to stop the deaths of Black people.
Mm-hmm. And we've been talking about these kinds of disparities of policing in previous shows that we've done on policing and police brutality, abuse, on the way in which the police have been frequently and recently targeting protesters and organizers involved in this Black Lives Matter movement.
Especially legal observers, right?
Legal observers, reporters. There was a petition going around online put out by Free Press, which I signed. I tweeted it at @media_PPP. That's where you can follow me and you can find out about the things that we talk about on the show. This is a petition asking for charges to be dropped that were filed a year ago against three different journalists, members of the media, who were reporting on Ferguson.
So much for the fourth estate in our country, where media was supposed to be keeping an eye on the government.
This isn't the first time that this has happened. President Obama, if you will recall, actually went after some AP reporters because of some of the reporting that they were doing. This is sounding a lot more like Mexico and the journalism that goes on there than it is America. What's going on in our country?
Well, we have a commercialized and corporate media. That's the problem. As a journalist that might be the best journalist in the world, they're working for companies that are basically trying to make money. They've taken the media, which is supposed to be for the people, and they're doing it for the corporations. So they're having a whole lot of other pressure that really isn't the interest of the people in the community.
Yes, we talked about that too, media bias. And in fact, we mentioned that in our community, there's a lot of people that have been talking about how upset they are about the kinds of stories that are coming out in the news and how biased they are against people of color and immigrants. And also how they tend to criminalize and negatively stereotype communities of color and poor people. And that enraged so many people, they wanted to hold the local media accountable. In particular, one station, Valley News Live, whose beleaguered news director Ike Walker has been getting a lot of play in this Facebook page. It's called it's a parody page called Valley Hate Live that was created to hold the local media accountable by showing the kinds of hate messages that they are publishing, both in their news director's Twitter feed as well as in their different programs and news stories.
And I think that people in the community should become incensed and actually have a way to act on it, because people do complain about the media. I've been doing media work for the past 20 years, and it is very difficult to get people to go and talk to a reporter, go on a news story, go on television, go on to a talk show, because they say, I don't trust the media. They always twist our words. They leave things out. And there's been no solid strategy to get people to, well, to voice that opinion to the people who run the media, make them accountable to mm-hmm. the community.
And, you know, this is why KPPP-FM is going to give you perspectives you weren't going to hear in the wind tunnel of all of the other types of mainstream commercial stations. We're a non-commercial station run by a nonprofit. So our goal is media justice. We want people to understand their communication rights. And here's, by the way, a huge story. It's been going on for a long time. A lot of cops have been coming out and saying, retired cops, ex-cops, how corrupt policing is. Not their police department in particular only. How corrupt policing is. How it sets people up to fail, specifically black people and brown people. How it targets them, makes them victims of over-policing, overcharging, over-arresting, and basically ruins the lives of those communities and destroys those communities. That's at the heart of what we're talking about today with our topic of black and white comparisons in society. And by that, we mean how different things are for communities of color than they are for white communities. The disparities are shocking in this country, especially in policing. This particular interview, which we are going to play here for in a second. I want you to listen to a piece of this interview. You can find the whole thing at worldstarhiphop.com. We'll have the link up for you at kpppfm.com with this podcast, and you will be able to listen to the whole thing. We can't play much more of it here because there's a lot of cussing. This is not a regular radio show that they have taken this interview from.
But however, we're going to play the first 4 or 5 minutes of it for you because it's very important to hear this past law enforcement officer.
I can't believe that this isn't all over the news. Why isn't this in the news anywhere? You need to ask yourselves that when you're just watching the media. You need to ask yourselves where your media is coming from and why you're not hearing about stories like this. This is ex-Baltimore cop. Remember, Baltimore has become the site of protests and rioting.
Yes, that's right. Here we go.
And he's ex-Baltimore cop Michael Wood.
Did you become this public figure?
I mean, I literally have no comprehension of what happened. I decided that I was just going to talk about some of the things we do so that it's like, look, this is what we do. Let's not try to pretend that we don't do it. We do it. We need to fix it and in a realistic, scientific way where we have some empathy and treat people like human beings because we don't. So we're denying that we have this. So what people are saying, these cops aren't racist. I'm not saying they are racist. What I'm telling you is they're participating in institutionalized racism. You're participating in it. You're guilty. And that's what I'm telling you. I'm guilty. I participated in it.
Is there a way to fix it?
Well, the easy thing from the police thing is I think empathy is number one. We have to start treating human beings like they're human beings. We have to, we just arrest them and you throw them in a cage, just like they did with Freddie Gray. And you don't focus on them being somebody's child or your, I mean, race is a social construct. This is my brother and I'm doing this to him. It eventually just doesn't, it's inconceivable. We're perpetuating that situation. So we're the ones doing that cycle. So when we see a 16, one time I was a shift commander in the Eastern District and I'm telling my guys, stop pulling over old white ladies, stop pulling over that young cute girl, stop. We focus on who commits the crimes. That makes sense. Until you complete the cycle and realize that you started doing that because of institutionalized racism in your organization. And so when you are jacking up those guys on the corner and you do find that dime bag, so you send him to jail. Now he can't go to work the next day, so he loses his job. And then he can't make it to court, so he gets his license suspended. And then he's driving, and then you are focusing on those 16 to 24-year-old black males, so now you're more likely to pull them over. Now you pull him over. Now he has a suspended license. Now he gets his license revoked. And now he can't get to the job legally. And you just and now he's dealt left with selling drugs on the corner. So you we're creating it. We have to step back and realize what the facts are on what we're doing. And the number one problem is the drug war, and then we have money and politics. Those are our two big issues that we have to solve before we get anywhere. So that's our role. That's what we're doing. So your mayors and your politicians are going to continue to encourage that. They're not going to take a risk and say, all right, how do we lower possession of marijuana? You know, you legalize it.
Yeah.
And you control it, and rates actually go down. Whether we're overseas or we're in Colorado, your possession rates for marijuana will go down. But we don't do that. We keep looking at everything like we're a hammer searching for nails, and we keep looking for what we're going to hit to stop it instead of standing back and using science and figuring out what are we actually going to do to fix this problem, what will actually have results.
This is very rare to hear a cop talk like this. I'm really happy that you're coming forward and speaking like this. But how many people that were with you in the police force are upset about this?
I think the vast majority is upset with me, and they're going to be upset with me because what I'm really trying to do is take power away from them. I mean, I really am. I'm trying to take power from them and give it back to the people because we're supposed to be serving them, not be an occupying force. Intentionally actually go out of my way to lift up a situation and de-escalate it and do better than to come in there and be like, you're going to jail, shut up, let's go, which is what I did for a long time.
So when you say the county, what does that mean? When you say white boy from the county, what's the county?
Right, so the suburbs. So in Baltimore, it's kind of weird. It's a little different. So Baltimore is incorporated. So it has nothing to do with the county. So there's like this hard line. So it's not where...
The county of what?
Baltimore County.
Oh, okay.
Right, so you have the city by itself. So here in Los Angeles, you think you have Marina Del Rey, you have Inglewood, you have all this stuff is L.A.
Mm-hmm.
In Baltimore, it's just Baltimore. So everything is concentrated and focused. And me coming from the county, I've never spent any time in the city growing up. I come in just as straight from the Marine Corps. That's ready to roll. We're going to do our thing. I'm going to put on a different uniform and continue my war.
Wow. So that was why you became a cop. So you came right from the military, and it just seemed like a logical progression.
Right. It's a logical progression. I think I went into the Marine Corps to prepare myself. I was a little uncontrolled. And decided to go into the Marine Corps to get my shit together and
discipline.
So I could get into the police department and everything would be. And that was always my
goal. So your goal was always to be a police officer.
Right.
And why was that?
I don't know. Said it since I was a little kid. I think you go in with these grandiose ideas that you're going to help people. And I wasn't doing what I actually set out to do. I was actually exacerbating the situation.
So you got caught up in the cycle yourself, the cycle of law enforcement and the way law enforcement behaves in Baltimore.
Wow. That's very refreshing to hear something that honest.
Yeah, definitely.
And we saw reports out of Ferguson by the Department of Justice and their own independent investigation that showed that there was a disproportionate policing and incredible numbers. Like every single person had more than one warrant out for their arrest in Ferguson, Missouri. It was ridiculous. The abuse of power that police are using in these communities is but one of the disparities, the differences that black people face in particular that are different from white people's lives. And that's why I think it's so hard for white people to actually understand why black people are so upset right now, why people of color are demanding that something change in this country. And it's like there's a completely different world, one where white people live, and in that world, there's community events where you go and mm-hmm. hang out and have ice cream with the police.
That's right.
And they're friends with them, and you skip arm in arm down the street together. And there's another community where kids fear police.
That's right. That's right. In fact, in Morehead, they did the civil rights report where a big part of that was back in 2001. And it's a practice that actually gets to the science of the differences between people of color and white people. They called it attitudinal surveys. Mm-hmm. And basically, it's like taking the August night where you're supposed to unite with the police, talking to white people, talking to communities of color, and asking them, what do you think about this? How do you feel safe? Do you feel like you're included? Do you want to participate? And with the white people, it was like, oh, this is great. It's a chance for us to get to know our officers. They're more human to us. We get to know their jobs. We feel more secure. And the communities of color is like, we feel scared. We feel invaded. We feel in danger. Mm-hmm. Drastically different reactions and awareness from two different groups of people. So sociologists can actually document this and quantify this, and it needs to be listened to. I mean, this police officer that has not a police officer anymore is a white person. Mm-hmm. And the way he's talking about how the departments are run and what he was doing. Imagine a person of color that becomes an officer and has to play the same way that guy did.
I mean, he was very clear. This was, what he was doing was institutionalized racism against black people, primarily people of color. And so what we think about as an individual failing in someone, if someone's a racist, it's because, you know, they burned a cross on someone's yard or called them a racial slur. And those are the only things that white people really know racism is. And they think that those that have racism or commit racism are evil, horrible people. There's no gray areas. There's no in between. There's just go all of the hell, you know, go to hell. You go straight to hell. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Yeah. Or you're a good white person. There's no in between, none whatsoever. And it's a chasm of, you know, a lack of knowledge, a lack of understanding of what is really happening in this country, which is this. There's been a very stark difference between the lives of black people and white people. And white people don't know about it. And they don't have to know about it. They're not required to know about it. So they don't know the level of our frustration or the level of difficulties that people of color face in this country every single day. Not just because someone might call you a bad name at work or discriminate against you because they didn't want to hire you. Not just because of that stuff.
Usually it's things like microaggressions.
It's a whole bunch of different kinds of microaggressions. And it's also environmental racism. It's the racism that the institutional types of racism, the medical racism that occurs, the medical disparities that occur, the lending racism.
Every institution.
Every institution, the educational racism, the historical racism, the whitening, the erasure of the history, of the inclusion, of the... you know, the apportionment, the work, the things that...
Contributions.
The contributions of all of the people that are pretty much erased from history.
And it's going to take a lot to unpack this because I grew up in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s and beyond. And my education was very biased as back in the 60s and 70s. And I didn't learn history at all. And I'm learning history when I went to college. I learned about things I lived through and was never aware of. And then today, there's a whitenizing of history even more. So they're whitenizing history that's already been whitenized. So there's a lot for us to unpack as white people to become allies. We're doing a very good job of this in our podcast. And I think it's very incremental. So I really appreciate the topic of today that you're talking about.
Yeah. And I hope that people share our past podcasts with each other. If you find them educational, informative, a good way to start talking about privilege and race and, you know, policing and poverty and all of the different topics, go to kpppfm.com. You can click on the what link, Duke?
They can click on the podcast link. That's probably the most direct way to actually see the podcast. But also you can click on live and on the air. And there you can see if we're on the air, which we are right now. And then right below there is all the podcasts there too.
And you can comment directly on that page.
That's right. On the podcast itself, you can give a comment about this podcast, and it's going to be specific to the subjects we're talking about today.
Correct. But you can also call us at 701-566-0917 and leave us a message. Just keep it clean. Give us your name and the town that you're from so that we can use it. And we may even play it on the air. Also, You can tweet us at media_PPP or send us an email at cindy@kppfm.com or duke@kppfm.com. Now, Nemo, we've been talking about black and white comparisons. How many people, what percentage of white people do you think have people of color in their life and have a real knowledge and experience of what it's like to be a person of color?
I don't remember the percentage exactly, but I know it's a very, very low percentage of white people who actually have a friend as a person of color.
Yeah, the majority of white people, 75%, have no people of regular contact with people of color.
Right. This is not like, you know, the black or brown person at the grocery store that does your bags. This is like, you know, a genuine friend that you know through and through.
Right. And we're talking about, for the majority of white people, for 75% of white people, they live in segregated neighborhoods. They go to schools that are mostly white. They shop at stores that are filled mostly with upper middle class, the neighborhoods that they live in, right?
Mm-hmm. Products that are specifically for white people.
Exactly. And the community in which they live is primarily geared toward their needs, their specific likes and dislikes. Most cities are still segregated, leaving a very small amount of housing for people of color in concentrated areas, which we tend to call ghettos,
yeah,
right? Or barrios.
Yes, or the projects and under public housing.
Exactly. So but see, the thing is, the difference between white poverty and people of color poverty is that white poverty is spread out all over the place. Did you know that? In
yes.
a community, it's spread out all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
There's a really great article. We'll have a link to it on our website where they talk about this in the Washington Post. And it's really interesting how these differences are so meaningful in terms of what they do to people's lives. But quickly, I want to go over one of these differences that have made our lives so difficult. They talked about it briefly, the targeting of police, of people of color. One very specific way that people of color were targeted was the drug wars. And it resulted in millions and millions of people being incarcerated, mostly people of color. And there were great disparities in sentencing. You guys heard about the different sentencing between crack cocaine and powder cocaine.
Oh, definitely, yes. That was the Reagan administration, didn't it?
And then the mandatory minimums that happened under Clinton.
Yes, and the three strikes and you're out.
Yeah, all of this stuff primarily and disproportionately affected people of color. And here is the slap in the face. You got to think about this because I heard this. I'm like, well, that's white privilege for you. This is a story in the Oregonian where it is now they're going to hire freelance marijuana reviewers. This is a job. And I thought, well, that's definitely a white dude's job. For sure.
Right.
That's right.
They won't give that person, you know, that job to a person of color.
So what
sure.
do you do? I'm a freelance marijuana reviewer.
Right. Yeah. And remember, Oregon, they're hiring people to do these kinds of jobs because more states are making pot legal even for recreational use. Oregon is one of them. And they join states like Colorado, Washington, Alaska, and Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, okay? And there's a lot of other states that are also legalizing marijuana for medical use, although many of the states that legalized marijuana for recreational use first legalized it for medical use.
Mm-hmm.
There seems to be a push in this country to decriminalize and legalize marijuana. 23 states in the U.S. now allow some form of medical marijuana. That includes Minnesota, folks.
That's right. In fact, Moorhead just opened up its first
dispensary
for the medical marijuana that the legislature passed, which they had a really hard time because there's so many misconceptions about marijuana that these old senators and representatives are back in the 50s, you know, watching Reefer Madness every night when it comes to medical marijuana.
Oh my God. But aren't even the medical requirements for medical marijuana pretty tight too?
Oh yeah. I mean, it is. It's totally, you have to have a very serious condition. They only allow it for, well, in Minnesota, you can only use it in certain forms.
That's right. And you almost have to be dead. Not quite dead yet.
Yeah, pretty
much.
Stuff.
Pretty much, yeah.
But you know, the people that work for it, I mean, in fact, a gentleman, his daughter was suffering from some sort of disease in Minnesota, and he really pushed one session to make medical marijuana because his daughter was dying. And this was a middle-class white man who saw that was one of the only drugs that would give her relief, and they still slammed a door in his face.
But if you want to go even further back, and you can find a documentary about this online, I think PBS put it out, somebody like that, it's the racist history of the criminalizing of certain kinds of drugs.
Plants. Criminalizing of natural plants that grow.
They were the natural medicinal plants that were available to people of color, certain groups. Heroin.
The
Chinese.
Mm-hmm, the poppies.
And how about...
the peyote cactus for
peyote,
for indigenous people in the Southwest.
And marijuana.
And marijuana.
Marijuana, that's our people's stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the thing about this is there is a very strong component of racism, or the way that the laws were applied in a racist way, such that now you have so many people in jail because of this. This plant, possession of this plant, was their exclusive crime. They didn't do anything violent. They didn't harm anyone other than they had this plant. And 23 states now allow some form of medical use of this plant, which originally was our people's plant, which is used for medicine. And the Oregonian and many other places, I'm assuming, now have positions where you are required as part of your job. This is part of the Oregonian's request. An experienced cannabis consumer. You have to be. You can't just be a consumer. You must be an experienced cannabis consumer.
What's the experience?
With deep knowledge about the variety of strains and the products that are available on the Oregon market. You have to be a connoisseur of cannabis.
Well, it is a plant. And people are knowledgeable on what breeds a plant, what sort of genetic mixes have created new plants. I mean, our whole farming industry for food is based on plants. And the wheat that we grow comes from, you know, thousands of years ago from Europe. The corn that we grow has been from Mexico. And in fact, corn has been in this country for thousands and thousands of years. And farmers,
thank a Mexican
for corn. Oh, yeah. And so farmers are very knowledgeable about the plants they plant, and horticulturalists are too. So this is, it sounds to me like they're looking for a professional pot connoisseur.
And here's another thing. Only in the white world is this available. This story is out of Colorado. Have you guys heard of what a weedery is?
A weedery? No, a weedery. No.
Yeah, you know how you go and you tour a winery?
Oh,
or
okay.
A brewery?
Oh. That makes sense.
Well, they're now going to build a weedery.
Wow.
In Colorado.
Yeah.
This entrepreneur, Christian Hageseth, he said to open the Colorado Cannabis Ranch.
The Colorado Cannabis Ranch.
Yeah, it sounds like the Vegas Bunny Ranch or something.
Well,
like
you know,
that.
Also, I guess one thing that, you know, although we're talking about the difference between white people and black people, that in Colorado, where they've been able to expand these products for sale to make profit and be taxed by the state. The state's making all sorts of money, but they're also expanding the plants. They're expanding the varieties of plants and the products that they actually produce. And it's very, very complex. You know, all sorts of things have changed.
So this is a statistic from the story, which is in Mashable.com. The $35 million project will include a greenhouse cultivation space, a restaurant, a bar, a gift shop, a dispensary, and a performance space. According to an interview.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure they'll sell plenty of food.
Yeah. And well, you can't consume it. You can't sample the goods the way that you would at a winery or a brewery because Colorado's laws do not allow for public consumption of marijuana. You have you got to go do that stuff in the closet at home.
I see.
Oh.
You know what I mean? You can't just do it outside. So this is kind of a, but every time this happens, they are decriminalizing, destigmatizing, people's use of marijuana in these different stories, in these different venues, in these different ways, and yet, Black people's lives are stigmatized, and they have not been destigmatized. Michelle Alexander, who wrote a fantastic book about the new Jim Crow, and is a fierce advocate of the reform of the mass incarceration of Black people in this country, in an article titled "White Men Get Rich from Legal Pot, Black Men Stay in Prison for 40 years, she said, poor communities of color have experienced the wrath of the war on drugs. This is another article you can find on our website at kpppfm.com. And this comes from Alternet, in which they talk about our topic of today, black and white comparisons. In this particular article, Michelle Alexander is quoted as saying that while Colorado's tax revenues, for example, are expected to bring $185 million to the state, 210,000 people who were arrested for marijuana possession in Colorado between 86 and 2010, according to the Marijuana Arrest Research Project, remain in the prison.
They're still in prison, even though they legalized marijuana in Colorado. They're still in jail for something that's not illegal anymore.
Right.
Oh, that's terrible.
And thousands of black men and boys are still sitting in prison for possessing the very plant that is making white people, and it's mostly white people,
right,
folks. Don't get it twisted.
That's right.
Who get to make the money. If you're white, you can profit from crime. You can profit from what we criminalize black people for.
That's right. That's right. Wow.
And, you know, we started off this podcast today listening to a segment from Michael Wood, an ex-Baltimore cop, that talked about how black people are stigmatized, criminalized. And Michelle Alexander goes on to say that, you know, these kids are being targeted. Very young kids are being targeted. They're getting arrested. They're getting saddled with criminal records. They're thrown in cages, and then they're released into a parallel social universe in which the very civil and human rights supposedly won by the civil rights movement back in the 60s by Martin Luther King and the marching and the sit-ins no longer applies to them for the rest of their lives. Now it's completely, totally legal for anyone in the society to discriminate against them when it comes to employment, housing, mm-hmm. education, public benefits, what kinds of jobs they can get, what kinds of neighborhoods they can live in. They're going to be second-class citizens, felons, for the rest of their life. Meanwhile, white people are getting rich. And that is one of the biggest differences among the way that white people and black people are treated. And we're going to talk about more. We're going to go into musical break here, but I got one more statistic. Share this one more.
It's very startling.
Think about this. The U.S. has 5% of the world's population. Just 5%. That's it. We're really a drop in the bucket. Yet we have a quarter, 25% of all of the world's prisoners in the United States. 2.2 million people with an M are in prison or jail. And 7.7 million are under the control of the criminal justice system, with black and brown, Latino and Native being the majority of them. That should make us all sick.
It is.
It is sick. It is a slave nation. It is a prison state.
Especially with the cruel bail system, right?
Oh my God. That's another podcast we talked about too.
Why?
We're going to hear more about this, but here, that's a lot of really heavy stuff. Let's have a moment of levity and listen to a clip of comedian Gary Owen talking about the differences between white and black church. And right after that, we'll take a musical break, and you can hear from one of the voices that will be making up the musical revolution, according to Dr. Cornel West, Tef Poe, and his song Prince. Roll that clip.
kids got baptized at a black church. Wasn't prepared for that. I mean, I prefer white church myself. Black church just takes too long for me. You got to have your day free. You can't make no plans going to a black church. Yep. You plan on going to a football game, you ain't gonna make it. Hey, you might not make Monday Night Football while you didn't. Black church is ridiculous, man. Remember the first time I went to a black church, I didn't know it was gonna take that long, you know? Like, I didn't eat breakfast that morning. I thought I was gonna eat in about an hour, you know? Oh my God, I almost died of malnutrition that day. Waiting for Sally Struthers to pop up, you know? I was sitting there in the church, man. I was like, why is this taking so long? You know, I was sitting there. I figured out having the third service why it was taking so long because, you know, when you go to church with white people, man, we don't say nothing, you know? We shut up and we listen, you know? If somebody tries to talk while our preacher's talking, we tell them, shh, zip it, focus, okay? One more song, we're gone. I remember the first time I went to a black church, I didn't know that when black people agree what the service is about, they don't wait. They yell out right there that they agree. I know it's okay to yell out. I'm sitting there. I'm the only white guy in the whole church. I'm getting upset with all the black people in the pews around me, you know? I thought they were being disrespectful to the preacher. I know it's okay to yell out. I'm just sitting there. Preach on it! Are you serious? Just gonna talk while he's talking? Yeah, that's really disrespectful. Why don't you zip it and focus? It's 1:30! I'm ready to go home! Talk about it! Are you with him? What? You're allowed to talk? Are you serious? I'm gonna say something. Okay, watch, I'm gonna say something. Hoodie-hoo! I heard it, Virginia. Come on, it's 4:30. Another song. Why is she singing Rihanna? That's nothing to do with church. It's 6:00. You guys have a step team? Are you serious? The First Baptist Steppers, it's 8:30. A freaking poet, this is a talent show! That's the fourth time she caught the Holy Ghost, she's lying! You can't catch the Holy Ghost four times in one day, it's 10:30! Stop passing this plate around! I don't have any more money! It's midnight! It's Monday! I'm late for work! It's forever, man.
WHHL. Hazelwood, St. Louis. Hot 104.1's A+. Is playing a brand new joint.
Check it out.
We call it the new at 2 p.m.
That's how we do it.
Brand new Tef Poe in the new at 2 today. This one is called Prince. Turn this up. It's Hot 104.1 Dirty Boys Radio.
Philly, I grind. Most of my hate me for it. They're proud that I'm working. I hate the fact that they get ignored. Demons plotting on me. Pico told me to stop it. Yeah, I'm new to this moment, but I know I'm a prophet. They're upgrading my charges, trying to stop us for real. It's getting real and I don't know how to feel. My little brother is dub. I cannot let him crash. I stay true to the moment. I do not wear a mask. My posse too emotional and all of them are artists. You go to Palestine and you really become a target. Now that I'm in this genre, I'm about to fulfill it. Your secret identity, we about to reveal it. Old holding heads down, and we are not remorseful, cause we are not the people that took a dollar from Soros. She kissing on my tattoos, smoking while I focus. We might both end up in prison. At least I got her open. I do not know these people. They keep calling my phone. All they want is a favor, throwing stones at the throne. She gave me a kiss, go get us free. I've been up for 3 days, real villains never sleep. P.O.E. Real, from a real clip. My mama was a beast, I'm a real prince. Hold up. Real, from a real clip. I see Mara, don't know.
real, real bitch. Hold up, hold up, hold up. Hold up. Obama spoke at Selma. Boy, that shit is pitiful. Vanilla Ice performed too. Why you think I didn't go? West Florida Senate Chambers. What you think we did it for?
What you think we did it for?
A young, with glorious pain. Aim in my brain, I hope the story don't change. 90 in up your restaurant in Dogtown. Call my Rocky, we the new dog pound. Hillary tried to kill us with that chicken, my. I pray the White House shakes when I mention my. It's my Machiavelli orders. They gon' watch it levitate. Cause this might be the last album that I ever made. Genocide in the shy, you praise them. Them conscious rappers hate it, but they made them. No children on this planet, I was praying for the moment. A dollar till they place one of my dead deads on it. Patriarchy killer, history I rewrite. My woman is a shooter, I can't show you what the D like. Dance with the devil, the chopper start drumming. We gon' burn the city down once again this summer. Real, real, from a real, real clique. My mama was a beast, I'm a real, real prince. Hold up,
hold up, hold up.
Hold up,
hold up,
hold up,
hold up.
Real, real, from a real, real clique. My mama was a beast, I'm a real, real prince. Hold up,
hold up,
hold up,
hold up,
hold up,
hold up,
hold up. Real, real, from a real, real clique. Oxymoron, don't know what a real, real is. Hold up,
hold up,
hold up. Motherfucker, hold up,
hold up,
hold up,
hold up,
hold up,
hold up.
Hold up,
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 hold up.
Today's new and two, straight from the crib, man. King Tef Poe, new song is called Prince. Shout out to the whole Del Mar Records, I see y'all, man. You like this song, what you think about it right now? Let me know something. 969-1041 from the ill side, 399-1041. You can also tweet me at A_plus and at Hot 1041. One more time for Tef Poe.
And that was Tef Poe, Prince. And this is Cindy Gomez-Shemp.
And this is Duke Gomez-Shemp.
And Nemo Cicados.
And you're listening to KPPP LP FM. We are broadcasting live right now through 365 Live. And soon we'll be found on your radio dial at 88.1 FM, adding local color to your airwaves. And today's topic is black and white comparisons. Doesn't sound like we're adding color, does it? We're talking just black and white, but we are talking about the differences.
Definitely. And Jane Alexander information is really crucial. I really encourage you to read what we're going to post on our webpage and also other of her works.
Yes, exactly. And Michelle Alexander, we were talking about her right before the break, wrote a book about the new Jim Crow, the age of mass incarceration. And, you know, it's a fantastic read. I recommend that people look at the disparities in the justice system, but we're also going to talk about the other differences in all facets of people of color's lives. And I think that if white folks could understand how much the differences are, they don't have the experience of that, so they don't understand it. But if they could, I think it would help them to see what it is that people of color are asking, what it is that they're begging for, what it is that they're screaming out in pain because of. Because it's not just the people that are being gunned down by the police. It isn't just the disproportionate rates at which people of color are arrested and charged and put into prison. It's a lot of other things. It's called, sociologists call it the double burden of poverty. In a recent Wonk blog post in the Washington Post titled Black Poverty Differs from White Poverty, they actually talk about the differences in the way that there is white poverty, of course, but it's very different to be black and in poverty in this country.
I totally agree. I spent 20 years of my life working with an organization called People Escaping Poverty Project, and I dealt mostly with white poverty. I didn't know that I was doing that, but I learned through my organizing experience that I was dealing with a whole different group of people that were within the same people in the United States. And as I did my work, I actually had to become more aware of that, and it changed the work, and it changed the way we did our work.
Mm-hmm. And then this particular blog post, they talk about this study that was done from 2009 to 2013, where they did an American community survey, and they collected data in Chicago. More than a third of all the poor African Americans in metropolitan Chicago live in high poverty census tracts. That means that the poverty rate there is above 40%. And the numbers have gotten worse since 2000, about 10 times higher than the poverty rate of poor people. In St. Louis, 29.5% of poor African Americans live in concentrated poverty. Among poor whites, it's just 1.6%. Think about the difference. Almost 30% of that St. Louis population lived in concentrated poverty. Okay? Meaning the poverty rate was very, very high. Half of the people or more almost were living in very extreme poverty. And among whites, only 1.6% of St. Louisans. What do they call people from St. Louis?
St. Louisians.
St. Louisians?
St. Louisians.
I don't know. We're going to call them St. Louisians. How about that? Yeah. I don't know.
And it's not about the people, first of all, and also all the conditions. And I love that sociologists are actually publishing this information. I just wish that the white majority of people would actually read the information and start internalizing it, because it really points at all the factors of racism and systemic racism that have led for people of color to be segregated and in the situation of today at a much lesser advantage. Just because you meet one black person who is rich or who's made a career in a profession, it doesn't erase all the people that are living in these conditions that keep them down.
Well, I think the reason for that is because if white people have to examine that they've been given all of these specific benefits by living in neighborhoods that were mostly white, that had better schools, that had better teachers, that had less policing, that had less convictions, less parents being thrown in jail, less people living in environmentally unsound or near environmentally unsafe places, causing them to have less illnesses, severe illnesses, having more opportunity to go to grocery stores that were full of good food rather than being in neighborhoods that are filled with liquor stores and McDonald's,
yeah,
where they call them food OACs.
Yeah.
The impacts on people of color and their neighborhoods, it's not just one thing. It's a myriad of things, and white folks don't understand that. So, and it's not just, for example, we were talking about the poverty rates in these neighborhoods. It's most poor whites in most metropolitan areas are spread out all over the city. They're not all corralled, fenced in one spot like they are in almost every city.
Every major city and the small communities. It's called housing discrimination. It's something that's been prevalent since slaves were freed, basically.
Yeah. Redlining and ghettos and all of those things were created by white people to segregate themselves from people of color.
And also black families left the South because of a predatory lending that brought blacks to neighborhoods in large cities. And then they were the ground was pulled out from underneath them, and they were decimated into further poverty over years and years and years with the banking system.
Right. And this is the racial disparities in concentrated poverty in these cities shows us some really shocking things. For example, in Chicago, less than 5% of whites are living in concentrated areas in Chicago, where 35% of black people are.
Chicago actually is one of the places that a lot of organizing has went on. Saul Alinsky came out of Chicago. I was trained by a Alinsky organizer out of Chicago, focusing on black communities because of housing issues. And that's one of the places where black families left the South and they came up north for a better life, had opportunities to get property, and then the property was taken away from them and their children, and they were forced into very, very substandard, segregated communities.
And you know what? Where the biggest disparities occur in cities like Los Angeles, Chicago, Houston, Atlanta, Washington, D.C., Phoenix, Philadelphia, Minneapolis, St. Paul, San Diego, in Tampa, Florida, Baltimore, Denver. You have all these protests.
Yes.
I don't think it's an accident that these cities are correlating.
Not at all. Not at all. And the people are rising up, and it's the people. It's not white people going in and saving people of color. It's people of color rising up and organizing, and they need white allies. They mm-hmm. need white allies.
So basically, these poor people are penned in these concentrated, in these ghettos, in these barrios, in these specific spots. But of course, that makes them even greater targets, easier targets for the kind of racial profiling, over-policing, and a lot of other negative impacts in their life. How else is there differences between black and white? The education gap. Everybody has heard of that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's institutional racism in our education. That's what that is.
And it exists in almost every school. It exists here in this community, in Fargo and in Moorhead. Look at the graduation rates of any group of people of color in Fargo and Moorhead. Fargo doesn't actually track them. Moorhead actually does. They're hard to find. You have to go really deep in their website or request the data and try to know what you're requesting.
And that's kind of shady. Why don't they want us to know what the graduation rates are? You'd think that that would be a point of pride. Wouldn't that be a rubric by which you go, look, rah, rah, sis, boom, bah, how many people graduated?
And very few. Less than 50%, less than 40%. Almost every three out of four people of color you see in school aren't going to make it out of school.
Mm-hmm. I mean, only about 40% of black people and brown people graduate from high schools in this country. And yet 80% of white people do. That is racial discrimination institutionalized in our system.
It is.
And it hasn't changed that much. And here's why. It's because of our priorities. Since the 80s in California, for example, they've built 22 prisons and only one university. You know, I can't understand why people continue to ask why angry protesters are in the streets, why there's riots, why there's marches, why there's the Black Lives Matter movement. And it seems to me it's quite obvious. People have been subjected to so many different forms of discrimination, how they've been targeted, even in the schools. We did a whole show about police in the schools.
Yes, we did.
And you can find that on
KPPPFM.com under the podcast link. And, you know, and Nemo brought up a really good point earlier when we're looking at how many friends does a typical white person in America, how many actually have a friend that's a person of color. And if it's only 25%, that means 75% of white people
live segregated lives. They don't.
Right. Like, I mean, I have some friends that moved here from Wisconsin, and they knew a lot of their acquaintances as people of color. But once they moved here, you know, and I became their friend, I was probably the first real brown friend they've ever had.
Oh, yeah. And I can't believe this. I grew up in Iowa, so it's very white there. But I went to college and had people tell me in college that I was the first Mexican person that they had ever known. And I've heard that a lot. I know that a lot of people of color can tell you similar stories, that they are the first black person, or they are the first Latino, or they're whatever. And it always makes me think, were you living under a rock or something? How is it possible that you never?
Well, it's pretty darn close.
Well, yeah, but it's very easy to see when you think about the way our cities were created and how we segregate. We had segregated schools. We had Jim Crow, folks. Come on.
Exactly. That's part of our history that we're not being taught, and that people want to even further erase for the younger generation not even to learn about.
Yeah, and that kind of erasure, it's almost creating some kind of, it's like you're forcing Alzheimer's on everyone. It's forcing amnesia about our history on everyone. It's making people unable to process and realize where their biases are coming from, where their lack of knowledge of the differences between the lives of black people and their own. And that means White people have to accept that if that is true, if all these things that we're talking about on today's show are true, and there are such stark differences in the way that this country has historically and continues to treat people of color and white people, then all of those things that you have may not be things that you just earned because you're better, because you worked harder, because you didn't earn it in the way you think you earned it. I'm not saying you didn't work hard.
That's right.
I'm saying white privilege gave you a bunch of benefits, and at the expense of people of color that you never earned.
That's right. Peggy McIntosh, she's from Wesley College, wrote a big piece on this many years ago. It's called Unpacking the Invisible Knapsack. It was designed to really to get white people to start seeing their privilege that they've unearned.
And it's important for white people to do this, because if white people cannot get over this and cannot deal with their own white privilege and accept that they have it, then we'll never be able to crack the racial divide in this country.
That's true.
And what is it? Why is it so hard to accept? Would you rather go on seeing black people and brown people caged, have their lives destroyed, have their families torn apart, people dying every day, black people dying every 28 hours? You want to continue this road that we're on in America because your feelings are hurt, because you don't want to hear that maybe you had a lot of privilege?
To be honest, it's even faster now. Isn't it like 21 hours?
Yeah, it's actually getting worse. It's really, it's terrifying. And white people need to wake up. And all of our black brothers and sisters and brown brothers and sisters out there that are shilling for supremacy, selling out your brothers and sisters like Bill Cosby, like, you know, some other local people that like to talk about, you know, responsibility politics in the mm-hmm. news. You are doing a disservice to a very real problem. And it has gone across every spectrum, every institution. Joblessness is another way in which the differences between blacks and whites are completely different. This gap isn't even getting smaller. It has been this way since I was born.
That's right.
And it hasn't changed at all. Black unemployment isn't converging with the levels of white unemployment. White unemployment, pretty small. In some communities, black unemployment is as high as 40% or bigger. Latino communities are almost twice as likely to be unemployed as white people.
And Native communities are very, very high, especially in reservations in Indian land. It's, yep. It's way up in the 90% unemployment.
Yeah, it's really stark. And folks, it isn't because you're just better at working or you're just better at looking for a job. There's plenty of things out there that you can look at that will show you that black people, Latino people, people of color are not even called because of their names, even when they have the exact same credentials. Mm-hmm. When they turned in applications with the exact same credentials and just changed one thing about the name so that it sounded like a black person or a person of color, they wouldn't call in almost half. It was almost 50% of the time more for white people. That's incredible.
It is. It is. As someone who has hired people in jobs I've been in where I've actually hired employees, I always found it interesting that I couldn't tell what race a person was from their letter of introduction and their resume. But then I started being able to figure things out because I'd see what people had experienced. And I worked at a place that I wanted to hire people of color. And I had to be so careful not to discriminate against a white person.
Right.
That I could get sued by white people because I hired a person of color. I couldn't just say, I want to hire a black person and that's all I'm going to interview. I had to actually create a credible way according to the white system that I could not discriminate against white people. But I found also that I couldn't tell what race people were. And so when a person walks in for an interview, then the person's like, oh, I thought you were white. And then there's an internal, explicit bias right there.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, this discrepancy, it goes into every level of black people's lives and brown people's lives. And there's people out there that think, well, you know, it's just because they didn't have the same qualifications. No, even when they have the same qualifications, it
often
doesn't
matter.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Sometimes they have better. Here's, listen to this. Black men with no arrest records are less likely to get hired than white people with criminal backgrounds. That's a real thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Black men with college degrees are less likely to get hired than whites who dropped out of high school.
Wow.
How does one win in a system where mediocrity in white people is still not seen as a reason to marginalize them, and being black is always a reason to marginalize people that are black in this country?
You know, and there's been a lot of discussion over the past 10 years about affirmative action, and that's what affirmative action was, addressing disparities. And in today's white people asleep world, that looks unfair because they don't have, we don't have an analysis of race and the history of race and racism in this country. And these need to be addressed. They need to be addressed in ways to start dealing with the discrepancies and the, and really evening things out. And it's going to take people time and a lot of effort to actually undo those things. And we have to get busy now.
Mm-hmm. And there's also disparities in the workplace. Black people are underrepresented in high income fields in this community. They looked at that as well. The same thing was true in wealth accumulation. White families were 4.3 times wealthier than black and Hispanic families in 2007. By 2010, that multiple had widened to 6.1. And it continues to grow. And when black and Latinos can't get hired, or Native people can't get hired in this country simply because of the color of their skin, is it any wonder? And then, of course, you have a huge difference in health disparities. Lower income and poor communities, again, with no supermarkets, no access to good food, and with environmental racism where they have pollution,
mm-hmm,
and dangerous environmental conditions, put squarely in the backyards of people of color while white communities are protected. All of these have health impacts. They did a study, and they looked at the health disparities between black and whites, and 19.6% of blacks were diagnosed as having diabetes from 2007 to 2010, compared with only 9.5% of whites. That's a lot. That's double. A pattern that is very similar could be seen in all of the other health areas, the major health areas killing people in this country: diabetes, child obesity, heart disease, cancer, strokes. And these health disparities also can arise from the differences, not just in the food OACs and things like that, but you're talking about the costs in health insurance, the you know, housing, the access to parks, you know, recreation, and the discrimination that people face from doctors and medical professionals in this country.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Big deal.
And of course, I'll bring you back to our opening topic that we started with, in the disparities in which black men are killed by police, the homicides, the killings by vigilantes, by police, the killings of black bodies. It's something that we have to think about. We have to compare the differences in the way that our black brothers and sisters are living and the way that white folks are living. And we have to stop the disparities, because we should have a conscience instead of making excuses and saying, hey, that's not my fault. I didn't do that. I didn't create those disparities. I didn't make it so those people didn't have this or that. Why don't they just try harder? Why don't they just educate themselves? Why don't they do this or that or the other thing that my ancestors, that my parents? Stop for a second and ask yourself instead, why in this Christian nation,
why do we have to beg for our lives?
And why aren't we asking, as white folks, why aren't white folks asking, how can I care for my brother, right?
How can I care for my brother?
Stop thinking about your white privilege. Mm-hmm. Acknowledge your white privilege and start thinking about how you can think about your brother. And here is where we're going to leave off this show about white, black and white comparisons. We're going to leave with Macklemore, a white rapper, examining his own white privilege. Listen up, folks. There's a lesson in there for some of you.
And you've been listening to KPPP-FM.
I see so many people lost who really try to pretend. But am I just another white boy who's caught on to the trend? When I take a step to the mic, is hip-hop closer to the end? Cause when I go to shows, the majority have white skin. They marketed the windmill, the air flare, and head spin. And white rappers' albums really get the most spins. The face of hip-hop has changed a lot since Eminem. And if he's taking away black artists' profits, I look just like him. Claim the culture that wasn't mine, the way of the American. Hip-hop is gentrified, and where will all the people live? It's like the Central District Beacon Hill to the South End, being pushed further away because of what white people did. Now, where's my place in the music that's been taken by my race? Cultural appropriated by the white face. And we don't want to admit that this is existence. Still scared to acknowledge the benefits of our white privilege. Cause it's human nature to want to be part of something different, especially when your ancestors are European Christians. And most whites don't want to acknowledge this is occurring, cause we got the best deal, the music without the burden of being black in a system that really wants you to rock. Cause all you need is a program and you can go and make hip-hop. And we hate the mainstream, cause we're the ones that took it. Now we listen to A$AP Rock and wear t-shirts that say Brooklyn. But it's not about black and white, right? I mean, good music is good music regardless of what you look like. But when you don't give them props, isn't that selfish? That's like saying rock was actually started by Elvis. So where does this leave me? I feel like I pay dues, but I'll always be a white MC. I give everything I have when I write a rhyme, but that doesn't change the fact that this culture's not mine. But I'm gonna be me, so please be who you are. This is something that's effortless and it shouldn't be hard. I said I'm gonna be me, so please be who you are. But we still own 40 acres, now we stolen their 16 bars. Hip-hop started off in a block that I've never been to counteract a struggle that I've never even been through. If I think I understand, it's because I flow too. That means I'm not keeping it true. Nope. Hip-hop started off in a block that I've never been to counteract a struggle that I've never even been through. If I think I understand, just because I flow too, that means I'm not keeping it true. I'm not keeping it true. I don't rap about guns, so they label me cautious. But I don't rap about guns because I wasn't forced into the projects. See, I was put in a position where I could choose my options. Blessed with the privilege that my parents could send me to college. Now, who's going to shows? The kids in the block starving? Or the white people with dough that can relate to my content? Marketed the music, now adapted to the lifestyle. What happened in jazz and rock and roll is happening right now. Where's my place in the music that's been taken by the media? With white corporations controlling what they're feeding you. I brought up A$AP Rock, but I'm not even dissing, dude. We love hip-hop, and what do you think the Caucasians are listening to? And I speak freely when I write this. If a black MC examine race, there goes half their fan base. White kids, and this is so true. And we didn't even have to fight the system. We just went and picked up the microphone, too. And we got good at it, so we should be rapping. But only supporting them is like burning Jimmy and buying Clapton. Now, Clapton's incredible, but no Jimmy, no foundation. See, here comes history and the cultural appropriation. White kids with do-rags trying to practice their accents. From the suburbs to the upper class, mastering a language. But hip-hop's not just memorizing words. It's rooted in authenticity, something you literally can't learn. But I'm gonna be me, so please be who you are. It's something that's effortless and it shouldn't be hard. I said I'm gonna be me, so please be who you are. But as I'm blessed with the privilege, they're still left with the scars. Come on. Hip-hop started off in a block that I've never been to counteract a struggle that I've never even been through. If I think I understand, it's because I flow too. That means I'm not keeping it true. Nope. Hip-hop started off in a block that I've never been to counteract a struggle that I've never even been through. If I think I understand, it's because I flow too. That means I'm not keeping it true. I'm not keeping it true.